Thank you so much. Is this mic on? I have trouble with mics lately. I need to make sure that... I say, citizens, colleagues, guests and friends, Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, distinguished members of the legislature, members of the Supreme Court, constitutional officers, cabinet members, Lieutenant Governor Farrell, First Lady Lori McCallum, and family. See, I'm no dummy who I married, am I? In keeping with time-honored tradition, I come before you tonight to report on the state of the state. I'm pleased to report that the state of our state reflects the will of our people. And like the state of our state, our will is strong. Our fellow citizens are looking to the future with courage, confidence, and hope. And I'm optimistic that what we do in the coming year will move Wisconsin toward an even brighter tomorrow. There is energy and optimism throughout the land, and as elected representatives of the people, we must recognize that our citizens feel the winds of change. The people I have talked to this past year across the state of Wisconsin do not fear change or reform. In fact, they expect it and accept it. From welfare reform to extended unemployment benefits to senior care, Wisconsin has embraced a tradition of change. Tonight, I also want to talk with you about what we can do together, not as Republicans and Democrats, or state and locals, or rural and urban dwellers, but as Wisconsinites, to build a better future for our children and for ourselves. As we gather in this historic chamber, it is time to put differences behind and embrace a new spirit of partnership between state and local government and between local governments. The past 6 weeks have been tumultuous. There are no easy answers or quick fixes as we put our fiscal house in order. But I believe now is the time to forge a new relationship between all units of Wisconsin government, a relationship based on mutual respect, on collaboration, and on a principle that by working towards a common goal, we can renew our state's spirit and health. So tonight, I extend my hand in the spirit of friendship and cooperation to begin this important journey. Working together towards a common purpose, we can achieve the oldest hopes of our ancestors, caring and safe communities, loving families, and prosperity for all. I'm optimistic about the future because during the past year, I witnessed all over the true Wisconsin spirit, a spirit driven by goodness and compassion. Let us now pause to reflect on a moment in time that will remain etched in our collective memories. On a Tuesday morning last September, we awoke to a beautiful, crisp Wisconsin day. Our thoughts were on the Packers' recent win over Detroit on the upcoming day, and we awoke to the sounds of our children scrambling down the stairs, still excited about a new school year. Our peace and tranquility were shattered when we saw on television the images of horror and anguish, the sounds, the pictures of destruction, the terror and the suffering that were immediately and forever seared into our memories. Since that day, we have lived in an age tarnished by the evil of a few, and yet invigorated by the goodness of so many. Within hours of the attack, we saw the true spirit of America and the true Wisconsin spirit. We saw members of the Wisconsin National Guard, specially trained to respond to any threat. They joined ranks with state and local law enforcement officers to quickly begin keeping us safe. We saw firefighters from Wisconsin travel to Ground Zero in New York City to lend a helping hand in the rescue and recovery efforts among the crumpled steel of the Twin Towers. We saw people in every walk of life, in every city and every town in Wisconsin, attend prayer services, pitch in with bake sales, and roll up their sleeves to donate blood. We saw local government doing its part in the war against terrorism by taking immediate action as our first responders. To all who displayed the strong leadership and steady hand to keep Wisconsin safe during that time, I speak on behalf of all Wisconsin in extending to each of you a heartfelt thank you. Tonight, on the 165th anniversary of the Wisconsin National Guard, 833 members of the Wisconsin Army and Air National Guard are on active duty in Wisconsin, the continental United States, and around the world. They are part of our response to September 11th and the Department of Military Affairs' continuing long-term involvement across three fronts, protecting Wisconsin's security, homeland defense, and fighting international terrorism. I would like you to meet some of the fine men and women representing Wisconsin in our war against terrorism. They show the diversity of activities in our common defense. They are mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters. Please hold your applause until after I've introduced them. We have Lieutenant Colonel Tim O'Brien, who is an F-16 pilot and is the fighter squadron commander of the 115th Fighter Wing of Madison. Tech Sergeant Tony White was a KC-135 boom operator with the 128th Air Refueling Wing of Milwaukee, who's flown missions both overseas and here in the United States since September 11th. Master Sergeant Tina Christensen, she's a radio communications specialist with the 128th Air Control Squadron from Volk Field, who helped protect the skies over Chicago for more than 3 months. Sergeant First Class Joseph Chapa, who's been on duty at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport as a member of Task Force Noble Badger. He represents the units assigned to airport security. And Chief Warrant Officer Dave Molitor, who's with the 829th Engineer Detachment Commander. 12 soldiers from this detachment, located in Richland Center, were ordered to active duty in November and deployed to an undisclosed location in Central Asia. They are now located in Kandahar. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in showing our appreciation for these brave men and women. All of America and all of Wisconsin have been tested and challenged since September 11th and over the past 13 months in many different ways. 17 counties in western Wisconsin were tested by floodwaters of the mighty Mississippi a year ago, and destructive tornadoes tested our resolve in western and northern Wisconsin. We were tested by terrorism and a faltering national economy that took its toll on Wisconsin and 44 other states. It caused budget shortfalls, for serious reexamination of our spending habits at every level of government. But with each test and at every turn, we witnessed the Wisconsin character at work. We saw Wisconsinites react to adversity with optimism and determination to overcome every challenge so that Wisconsin can be a better place to live and to raise a family. There are countless examples of where the Wisconsin character prevailed this past year, including many where our stage extended beyond our borders. Just a few weeks ago, the entire world watched in wonder as our very own homegrown Casey Fitzrandolph of Verona and Chris Whitty of West Allis competed in the Salt Lake City Olympic Games. Of course, we all know that Casey and Chris were golden. Both Casey and Chris are competing in Europe and can't join us tonight, but that won't stop us from celebrating their success of what it took to win gold. Now, Jeff and Ruthie Fitzrandolph have spent thousands of hours holding and helping to mold their son's character and their work ethic. As a parent and coach myself with three very athletic and active children, I know the difficulties of balancing work with the demands of instilling in your child a competitive spirit that you hope they will carry with them the rest of their life. There are many sacrifices that Jeff and Ruthie have made to help Casey along his path to Olympic glory. And tonight, we pay homage to the parents for their dedication and their commitment. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to recognize tonight Jeff and Ruthie Fitzrandolph. There's another individual with us in the chamber who knows a thing or two about adversity. There's supposed to be a rebuilding year for Badger basketball. We had a new coach, new system, group of young players, and one of the toughest schedules in the country. I can actually kind of identify with this. But with each game, the Wisconsin character emerged. We watched the new coach and the determined players react to adversity with confidence and conviction to overcome every challenge that was thrown their way. The result is Wisconsin's first Big Ten title since 1947. The Badgers also became the first UW team since 1941 to beat every conference team in the same season. The coach, Bo Ryan, is the winningest first-year coach in Wisconsin history with 18 wins and only the seventh coach in Big Ten history to win the conference championship in his first year. And just today, Bo was named Big Ten Coach of the Year. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Bo Ryan. Great job, Bo. I also want to recognize that Marquette basketball coach Tom Crean has done a great job this year. Coach Crean is in Cincinnati tonight, couldn't join us, but he deserves our thanks for a job well done. See, now those of you that are Marquette fans, you know Bo Ryan's going to use the applause meter as he recruits next year, so I just point that out. Now, we accomplished much under the dome this last year as well, primarily by putting political differences aside and working together for the common good. Let me take a moment to highlight a few of these accomplishments. I was pleased to have been able to bring together key legislators, the business community, sportsmen and sportswomen, and environmental groups to craft a consensus and pass a law to protect our wetlands and our environment. This law is the first of its kind in the nation. Two individuals who played key roles were Republican Representative Neil Kedzie of Elkhorn and Democrat Senator Jim Baumgart of Sheboygan. Thank you, gentlemen. Working in a spirit of bipartisanship with AARP, the Coalition of Wisconsin Aging Groups, and countless Democrats and Republicans, we passed a prescription drug benefit program for nearly 300,000 Wisconsin seniors that will serve as a model nationally for senior health care. Last year, I introduced a fiscally sound, balanced, and realistic budget for the state, which kept spending to the lowest level in more than 30 years, held the line on taxes, and protected our core priorities of education and helping the state's neediest citizens. These principles paved the way for a bipartisan budget agreement in August. I want to acknowledge Republican Assembly Speaker Scott Jensen of Waukesha and Democrat Majority Leader Chuck Quala of Madison. I also want to acknowledge the co-chairs of Joint Finance Committee, Republican Representative John Gard of Peshtigo and Democrat Senator Brian Burke of Milwaukee, and thank them for getting the budget passed in the shortest time in more than 6 years. And earlier this year, Wisconsin became the first state in the country to provide extended benefits to unemployed and displaced workers. I hope that wasn't a legislator anticipating being displaced this next year that started. There were other accomplishments as well. We've taken huge strides in our relationship with the state's tribal governments. I would like to acknowledge the tribal chairmen who have joined us this evening. Could you stand up, please, tribal chairman? We have continued to move people from welfare to work. Just last week, I joined President Bush and Secretary Tommy Thompson in announcing a welfare reform agenda that will help more welfare recipients to achieve independence through work, protect children, and strengthen families. We invested in smaller class sizes because smaller class sizes have proven to be an effective learning environment for children. Thanks to the efforts of this legislature, SAGE will allow more than 500 schools to reduce class sizes in grades K through 3. We have provided our youngest children with every opportunity to reach their full potential by investing in 4-year-old kindergarten. We are taking the necessary action to make Milwaukee the jewel of Wisconsin. We are taking steps to make Southeast Wisconsin a world-class economic powerhouse. When we build Milwaukee, and when we build Southeastern Wisconsin, we build all of Wisconsin. That's why we must improve the Menominee Valley through the redevelopment of Canal Street. We will be helping revitalize the downtown development in Milwaukee. The Marquette Interchange, which is the heart of Wisconsin's transportation system. And the plans for the Marquette Interchange have been finalized, and I just want to share that is going to be the largest capital project in our state's history. State Fair Park is now becoming self-sufficient and a year-round attraction, thanks to the steps that I've taken. UW-Milwaukee is becoming a first-class institution nationally with the help of our budget. And the consortium of 5 universities through the new TechStar program will combine academics and business to create economic growth in southeastern Wisconsin. Working together in a bipartisan fashion, legislative members of the Building Commission were influential in getting the first BioStar project approved, a project that keeps UW-Madison at the forefront of biotechnology. I applaud Senators Risser, Meyer, and Ressler, and Representatives Hovind, Baracus, and Plaley for their work. Wisconsin taxpayers saved $62.9 million through the aggressive use of my veto pen, the highest veto amount ever for a biennial budget signed into law. I unveiled a comprehensive energy package that serves the economic interests of our state and preserves our resources and our environment. In the aftermath of 9/11, statewide price gouging at gas stations was stopped after I personally directed investigators to identify known offenders immediately. Very shortly after the cowardly attacks in America, I established an anti-terrorism task force to address current and future terrorism issues in Wisconsin. And all of us did our part throughout the year to ensure that the Packers returned to the NFL playoffs after a short but very painful absence. And while they didn't go all the way, we know the Pack will be back. That's a list of accomplishments of which all of us can be proud. The best is yet to come. In my inaugural address last year, I introduced the principles that would guide me as your governor, holding the line on government spending, no tax increases, improving education, building Wisconsin through economic development and job creation, and assisting our seniors and the neediest of the needy. The executive budget I sent to you last year also reflected these principles, and they are the foundation of my Budget Reform Act, which was unveiled January 22nd. I believe so strongly that these principles reflect the core values of all Wisconsinites that I state them again. One, we must always put the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin, the taxpayers, first. Two, we have a responsibility to provide the best education for our children. That's why I exempt schools from cuts in my Budget Reform Act. My goal is to make Wisconsin schools the best in the world. And we get there by having the best teachers in the world. Teachers like Tina Jenkins, whose dedication and professionalism exemplify our teachers and staff throughout Wisconsin schools. Tina has been a teacher for 30 years, the last 20 at Malcolm Shabazz Alternative High School in Madison. Tina embodies the Wisconsin spirit. She's a true pioneer. She taught the first African-American history and women's classes in Madison's traditional high schools and continues to be a well-known advocate for young people and a mentor to parents. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in thanking Tina Jenkins. Three, we will create high-paying jobs that reward high-skilled labor, the kind of labor that has become the hallmark of the Wisconsin work ethic. And four, we have an absolute responsibility to care for people who can't care for themselves. That's why a protected senior care prescription drug program and the medical assistance programs in the Budget Reform Act. Tonight, I want to put a face on why I made this decision relating to medical assistance. Dr. Kevin Izard is a family practitioner from Milwaukee. He is a Wisconsin Medical Society member from the Capitol Drive Healthcare Center, where 90% of his practice is with Medicaid patients. Dr. Izard, you have dedicated your life to serving the urban poor, and for that, Wisconsin thanks you. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Kevin Izard. See why I wanted to speak about the character of Wisconsinites this evening. We have such wonderful people contributing so much. But today we are in the midst of a challenging special session. Government must do what all Wisconsin families do when they gather around the kitchen table and look at their budgets. live within its means. I said it wouldn't be easy, but that it's time to make tough decisions and limit government spending while protecting services for those who need us the most, our children, the elderly, and the disabled. You may recall that in my Budget Reform Act speech, if you haven't, I'll remind you, I predicted this would be a controversial package because it holds the line on taxes and dramatically reins in government spending at every level. Tonight, I repeat my pledge to the hardworking men and women of this state. I will continue to oppose any budget solution that includes higher taxes. And I will continue to push for greater efficiency in government. My plan calls for bold reform of the state and local partnership. Those who argue that the shared revenue program should be preserved in its current form ignore the fact that much has changed in state and local finances in the last 30 years. From a state budget perspective, there is little doubt the state and local partnership needs to be reformed because the current system is simply not sustainable. It is time Wisconsin had this much-needed discussion. In town halls and city councils across the state, and right here in the Capitol, already the debate has changed from how we spend money to how we can save money. In fact, during the past 6 weeks, I've seen a number of leaders step to the plate and initiate discussions on making government more efficient. Some leaders have had great success in this area in the past, and their efforts to save money through consolidation and the merger of services with neighboring governments is gaining a new momentum. These architects of change include Ripon Mayor Robert Summers, who says every elected official, regardless of constituency, must listen to taxpayers and continue to cut spending. And Wausau's Linda Lawrence, who is pushing a merger plan before the Budget Reform Act was unveiled, and now wants to accelerate her plan to save the Wausau taxpayers' money. Appleton Mayor Tim Hanna, who continues to push city staff and city leaders to pursue a regional strategy, a strategy based on coordination of services that promote stronger community partnerships and provide greater value to the citizens. Another architect of change who has understood for years the need to consolidate services is Waukesha County Executive Dan Finley. Dan has called for a new countywide Department of Public Safety to manage their dispatching system. In Madison, Mayor Sue Bauman has proposed budget cuts and is working diligently with Dane County officials to strengthen efforts to consolidate city and county functions. South Milwaukee's David Keep is exploring consolidation with Cudahy and St. Francis leaders for police dispatch and emergency crews. Nina's Ken Harwood has taken steps towards merging their fire department with that of nearby Menasha. There have been discussions about saving taxpayers' money in Marathon County. Officials there want to consolidate county parks and forestry departments. Brown, Otagabee, and Winnebago counties are talking about consolidating landfill and recycling programs. And Price County officials adopted a hiring freeze and froze spending on capital equipment. Former Milwaukee County Executive David Schultz said there's a new spirit of public engagement for reforming and ultimately reinventing local government in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. I quote, "For more than two centuries, our tradition in the United States has been one of constantly reinventing our society and government. If Milwaukee and Wisconsin can do so now, then the future will be bright with promise and opportunity." And Racine County, where Executive Gene Jacobson, a Kettle Commission member, has had success with consolidations and mergers, recently was asked by other municipalities to provide insight on how to get people to cooperate. Let me quote, she said, "Put them in a room together. Give them a little coffee, something to eat, We have to put politics at the door. It's just good, plain, common sense. And after the governor's message, we're all going to be crying together. We might as well work on solutions together. Ladies and gentlemen, the debate has changed. And we must continue to move the focus from protecting government institutions to protecting the working people, the taxpayers in the state of Wisconsin. Let me repeat, the debate has changed. To all local officials, I say this tonight. Let's work together because we share a common goal, shaping a better tomorrow for the hardworking families of this state and giving taxpayers the best return we can on their dollar. I am committed to working with town boards, county executives, village presidents, and mayors across Wisconsin to develop long-term solutions for efficiency, cooperation, consolidation, and accountability at every level of government, state and local. The Budget Reform Act contains language to create a task force to address this very issue. But because the debate has so clearly moved from spend to save, we must move forward with a task force immediately. Reform itself must begin now. So tonight, I will create by executive order the Governor's Task Force on State and Local Government, to be headed by Milwaukee's Tim Sheehy. The goal of the task force will be to build a better Wisconsin through state and local partnerships. The task force will consist of those who are willing to roll up their sleeves and work together for the greater good of Wisconsin's taxpayers. My first appointments are going to be those representing local government. The first charge of the task force is to conduct a thorough review of state mandates. We must eliminate all mandates that are barriers to consolidation and emerging local government functions. We must make it easier for local governments to consolidate and to become more efficient. We must identify financial incentives for local government to consolidate services where possible. We need to reward economic development and growth. Every study has shown, and few people in the state disagree, that we have too much government in Wisconsin. We now need to approach the problem in a reasonable fashion. As we ponder important fiscal issues, there are other matters that will command our attention this year. In the coming months, we'll accelerate our efforts within Wisconsin on issues concerning terrorism and security. Wisconsin stands to receive as much as $20 million in federal aid this year for domestic security. I recently met with Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge. He delivered a clear message. He said, as we move forward to protect our families through law enforcement measures, our statewide effort must focus on regional needs within our borders. Local officials are going to play a crucial role as first responders. We must recognize that what works in Milwaukee or Port Washington may not work in La Crosse or vice versa. Cooperation, regionalization, and accountability. These are themes that will dominate the landscape this year. In the coming months, it's going to focus on economic development and education, two separate policy areas that are driven at the local area, and two policy areas that for the first time ever in Wisconsin are now linked as one. For too long, the debate in this state has been financing education has pitted educators against the business community. Last year, I moved to bridge that gap by bringing many of the state's key players from both sides together for discussions. I knew such a meeting was risky, but I moved forward because I believe that when the children of Wisconsin receive the education they deserve, other goals, a strong economy, low crime rates, healthier families, and fewer demands on government, those goals are more easily within reach. Today, with educators and business breaking the old politics-as-usual mold, the dynamics have changed dramatically in this state. The partnership of business and education is moving forward with unshakable determination. I applaud all the individuals involved in this discussion for their willingness and their courage in the face of criticism to work together to bring Wisconsin schools and Main Street, to bring them closer together. I remain optimistic that this new dynamic and the fruits of our labor are going to pay dividends now and for many years to come. We live in a globally competitive environment. The pace of change is rapidly increasing and the stakes are growing higher. Many of our neighboring states have recognized this and are positioning themselves. We must move quickly too. Later this spring, I will unveil a statewide business plan as part of my Build Wisconsin program. The plan's foundation will be based on the economic development model of clusters. Cluster is a related technology or industry where the elements necessary for prosperity, the ideas, the research, capital, workforce, government support, exist in one place. Instead of focusing on individual companies, clusters focus on regional economies and on related firms and the supporting infrastructure. Now, some of the clusters Build Wisconsin will pursue include agriculture, biotechnology, finance, insurance, information technology and data processing, manufacturing, papermaking and forest products, medical devices, automotive, and tourism. The good news is that Wisconsin's per capita income in the 1990s grew slightly faster than the per capita income of the Midwest and the nation. And the cost of living is significantly lower in Milwaukee than in our main border state competitors, that of Minneapolis and Chicago. On the other end of the spectrum, in the year 2000, both Illinois and Minnesota workers earned more each year than the hardworking men and women in Wisconsin. That's simply unacceptable. We must do better. We must set our goals high. My vision for Wisconsin's future is expansive, but not expensive. We can make government at all levels work better and work smarter. We'll continue holding the line on spending and taxes so that Wisconsin moves out of the top five highest tax states by 2003 and out of the top 10 by the year 2006. With a statewide business plan as our roadmap, our goal will be to raise Wisconsin's per capita income above the national average by the end of 2005 and surpass Illinois and Minnesota in wages earned by the end of the decade. In times of challenge, we must keep our sight on our goals. In the coming years, we will build on our past successes to enhance our economic vitality and to preserve our quality of life. As I reflect on our state of the state, I'm bolstered by the belief that the goodness and the strength and the will of the people will prevail. The future is ours to make. Now, while some states may fret and worry about the future, the Wisconsin spirit will serve as our beacon for a prosperous and healthy Wisconsin. Recently, I was asked what Wisconsin might look like in 10 years. I see a future with a vibrant business climate that will continue to create good-paying jobs. I see a thriving economy with nationally renowned companies opening their doors and a highly skilled workforce. I see schools where children are challenged, teachers are given the respect they deserve, and accountability is the common denominator for our entire school system. I see children and families with health care and child care. I see top-notch academic programs producing first-rate students and leaders that stay right here in the state of Wisconsin. I see a national biotechnology center in the state of Wisconsin. I see basketball championship banners hanging from the rafters of the Kohl Center and Bradley Center. I see the Lombardi Trophy back at its rightful home, Lambeau Field, the same year the Badgers win the national championship on the gridiron. I see families exploring open space, swimming at our pristine beaches, fishing in our lakes, and riding on our bike paths. I see a world-class transportation system that quickly and smoothly moves people and goods around and into Wisconsin and moves products out. I see farmland where young children learn to carry on the historic legacy of the family farm from their parents and their grandparents. I see visitors and residents celebrating Wisconsin's ethnic and cultural diversity from Superior to Kenosha, from Marinette to Monroe. I see great days ahead for men and women of will and a vision. But most of all, I see a Wisconsin in the shining light of a rising sun, fresh from the burning creative hand of God, the state that we all love so much. Thank you very much. God bless you, and God bless Wisconsin. you.
Live from the State Assembly Chamber, you've just heard the State of the State message by Governor Scott McCallum. As soon as they recess the session, we'll be getting a reaction from state legislators to the State of the State message. As you heard, Governor McCallum did talk about the budget problem, the state's budget deficit of more than $1 billion. While he did not retreat at all from his proposals in the budget message and his budget repair bill, namely ending shared revenue to local governments, he certainly softened the rhetoric toward local governments from his budget message, in which he accused local governments of being big spenders. That brought quite a reaction to the state capitol of local officials coming to the capitol. Mayors, county executives, town officials. The town officials wore buttons saying towns are not big spenders. One of the mayors had some buttons made up, which some of the mayors wore, that said, anybody but McCallum. But we certainly have a more conciliatory tone, if not changing any of his basic proposals from the budget message. And very much in the tradition of State of the State messages, of course, a great deal of cheerleading for the state of Wisconsin, introducing military personnel, introducing local officials, teachers, a doctor. Governor Thompson did a great deal of that with his messages, and Governor Scott McCallum has followed suit. The session is recessing. And let me talk first with Representative Jim Cruiser, a Democrat from Kenosha. Well, what's your reaction?
Well, I think the governor had a lot of things to talk about 9-1-1 and a lot about sports teams, and I think that consumed 22 out of the 45 minutes. He is long on thunder and short on lightning. There are some things that we have accomplished jointly in this body, but I think that the issues that are before us aren't as simple as he lays out. He hasn't been to the town hall meetings I've been at. Local government officials are still up in arms about his proposal, and he hasn't backed off one step. I think he ought to be going to some of those town hall meetings like I have and to hear the reactions of how this has to be modified. So I think his current proposal as it stands for revenue sharing is going to look like Swiss cheese by the time we're done with it.
He certainly changed his rhetoric, though. No rhetoric about big spenders this time.
Yeah, he said big spenders seven times in his budget address, and he didn't say it once now. So maybe he's handing out an olive branch, but I don't think that he did enough to back off the anger and the hostility of some of the elected officials out in this around the state and the people in the community. I mean, he says he wants to protect the most vulnerable, and yet at the same time, he's cut the funding for the 13 community centers around the state that actually help the most vulnerable and the poorest people in our state. So I don't think you have the total package here, and I think he didn't speak at all about how we're not going to shift the shaft to local governments to make them pay for these things, the added expenses that they're going to have in the future, which results in the property taxes going up.
He's apparently moved up the study of state and local relations, but that apparently would not be quick enough to have a result for the current budget deliberations.
Yeah, we're 8 months away from the election, so I guess now is a good time to have a task force until after the election, and we'll figure out what they come up with after that, and we'll hear about it the next governor's budget proposal next January.
If you don't end shared revenue, though, the governor has repeatedly in the past said those who are criticizing should come up with their own plan. How do we save over $1 billion?
Well, I think a number of those discussions are happening right now in joint finance. They've had a number of motions which were bipartisan and where they cut a number of state positions, and I think that's what you need to do. Government has two things, personnel and material, and there's a lot of personnel up here that has been added over the last 16 years, and I think now is a good time to start getting rid of some of those positions.
Is the vow for no general tax increase, is that doable?
I think the general tax increase is possible. I don't know that increased fees, a fee is a tax is a fee, is out of the question, but I think fees might be increased. And I believe that there's going to be a number of hits at the local government level, but not to the extent that the budget has been proposed by the governor.
This pretty much dominates the discussion here. We do have some other unfinished business in this session. Some would say campaign finance reform. It looks as if the legislature will not accomplish reapportionment. Is it pretty much down to the budget? That's about it?
Yeah, I think the courts are going to decide the legislative boundary lines. I think the campaign finance report is dead because the governor won't come to an agreement on not vetoing anything that comes to him. So I think that's dead also. So it comes down to the budget, and hopefully we can wrap that up with due diligence.
Let me talk to another state representative briefly, Dan Shoof, a Democrat from Beloit. Well, when he came out with the budget message, Beloit, I guess, is the city that would be hardest hit by ending shared revenue. Is that right?
Well, along with a lot of other communities that have more than 40% of their revenue derived from shared revenue. But we would be hardest hit on the numbers, yes.
So what is the alternative, though? We still have to find more than $1 billion in savings.
Well, the tough decisions in this Joint Finance Committee, then the Assembly, and then the Senate. I mean, we have to look at state first. He talks often about the Citizen Commission that's going to have a report back to the legislature. Well, Truth in Sentencing, Kettle 1, Kettle 2 came back with suggestions that had no teeth. My suggestion would be, give that citizen commission some teeth, similar to a base closing commission, where it would have to come back to the floor of the legislature, not be monkeyed with by the partisan caucuses on each side, come back to a vote and see where the votes are there.
Could Beloit deal with this by consolidation and more efficient services?
Well, Beloit is a wonderful community that spans over the state line. There's 500,000 people between Rockford and Janesville, and there'll be 800,000 people in the next 20 years. So it's a wonderful, vibrant community. Although Beloit is carved under the 6 school districts, 2 state lines, soon to be 3 congressional districts. So those political districts we've dealt with for 150 years. We know how to erase those lines, but you can't erase that state line. Really, that market of Beloit stretches right over the state line. So those things are hard to address. I particularly was interested in his comments about southeastern Wisconsin being the economic engine for the state. We collect sales tax, we collect income tax from this economic engine in the rest of the state. And it was a shared revenue program that shared that prosperity in an equitable and progressive way across the state. So every community, Eau Claire, Ashland, Superior, Oshkosh, could be strong. And that's the system we've had in place. He's grabbed that, and presumably as the economy recovers, those revenues go up and it goes to state programs. So we haven't heard what he plans to do with that revenue.
If the cut for shared revenue is drastically reduced, that almost means that school aids have to be cut, doesn't it? They're by far the biggest item in the budget.
Well, I think everyone will have to tighten their belt, but the governor's right that education should be protected. They've been under revenue caps for 8 years. There's a lot more fat in the state budget that we can go after.
Very good. Thank you very much. Dan Shoof, Democrat from Beloit, one of the cities that would lose the most amount of shared revenue. Let me talk to another person here. We're live on the air here. I want to get a reaction from one of the Republicans, a member of the Joint Finance Committee, Dean Cowherd of NENA. Well, what did you think of the state of the state?
Well, the governor did a good job, again, of outlining the good things that are happening in the state. I don't know if he gave us much direction on the Joint Finance Committee as we enter these final days. He really didn't, give us too much direction other than the fact that he made it perfectly clear, I suppose, that we're not to touch education, that that's a key component and protect the vulnerable people in this state. But he stressed to us that the shared revenue formula, is broken. We need to change the way we've normally done business. And, in these next few days on the Joint Finance Committee, hopefully the Republicans and Democrats are going to have to come together and figure out how we're going to get this through the Joint Finance Committee and onto the legislature.
So far, you found, I guess, about $120 million in savings beyond what the governor's bill proposes. So if you preserve most of shared revenue, you only have something like $800 million to go. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And, we were able to do some cuts together. There's a lot more cutting that we can do out there. But, when the day is over, we're probably still going to be short. And so there's going to have to be some big ticket items that are going to be on the floor. And we've got some tough decisions to make in the next couple days, and, you know, we're going to need a dance partner. The Democrats are going to have to show their cards a little bit and tell us what they're hoping to get out of this Joint Finance Committee so that we can move it along in a bipartisan fashion. So far, we haven't seen that from the Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee. But we're getting there, and, you know, my hope, being a city guy from the Fox Valley, is that we can preserve some of the shared revenue cuts. We can, you know, blunt the initial impact of it and allow the cities to have a gradual, gradual loss of shared revenue, where they could do some planning and plan for the loss of shared revenue instead of just taking it all in one swoop.
School aids are by far the biggest item, magnitudes above all of the others, and if you also take off the table any general tax increase, to restore much of shared revenue, don't you have to cut into school aids?
Well, you would think so, but we're able to at least give a good start on cutting spending where maybe we don't have to touch the schools. And the governor made it perfectly clear tonight that school aids and the education of our children for the next generation is very important to him. And if we can do it without touching school aids, I think that'll be a big positive. But the job ahead of us is a lot easier than it looks, so it is a lot harder than what it looks, and we're not going to be able to do it unless we do it in a bipartisan fashion.
Well, thanks very much. Dean Calfort, Republican of Neenah, a member of the Joint Finance Committee, and let me get one more reaction before we have to go back to our studio. Democrat Antonio Riley of Milwaukee, briefly your reaction.
Well, you didn't hear a whole lot of new stuff tonight, the governor's speech. A lot of stuff concerning September 11th, which was a horrible time, but we have to move forward to protect this state. But I was somewhat taken aback by the governor's introduction of Dr. Izzard from Milwaukee as an example of his reason for not cutting health care programs. But yet, in the budget he's proposed, Dr. Izzard is now working part-time, is going to be joining the staff over at Westside Healthcare Association, a federally qualified health clinic in my district, that the governor in his budget is proposing to eliminate the funding for. So I think there's a little irony there. So I hope that in the process we'll be able to restore those funds and Dr. Gizzard can come back and stand up and have a clinic to work in when the governor's proposing to eliminate it.
Can you restore any of the shared revenue without cutting into, for example, school aids?
You know, it is going to be tough for us to balance things out, and there are a lot of issues that need to be back on the table. I think you're going to look at the budget in its entirety. You can't just necessarily have a bunch of sacred cows left and right here or there, and so we're not going to touch something. But I think school aids is an issue, but the governor's saying so far we're not going to do it. But he can't maintain his shared revenue program as he is requesting that we eliminate it without having to look at all state spending, including the growth rate of state spending in terms of state operations, which has grown by 6.6% since 1988. So we need to get that under control, maybe go beyond the governor's proposed cuts in state government, make some much more substantial cuts in the state bureaucracy. That should free up a lot of additional cash.
Well, very good. Thank you very much. Representative Antonio Riley, a Democrat from Milwaukee, with more reaction to the governor's State of the State message, which dealt in part, of course, with the biggest issue before the legislature, which is the budget deficit and the governor's proposed budget repair bill. That will occupy the legislature probably for a couple of more months. This is the first time since 1983 that the legislature and the governor have faced a budget deficit of this magnitude. Most of the legislators were not in office the last time they faced this magnitude of problem. In 1983, both houses were controlled by Democrats and the governorship, and they increased taxes with a temporary surcharge on the income tax, which did turn out to be temporary. That's the way they solved the budget deficit almost 20 years ago. But as you heard, Governor McCallum has taken off the table any general tax increase, and he also does not want to touch school aids, the biggest item in the budget. So that makes it very difficult to balance the budget. Well, that wraps things up from the Assembly Chamber of the State Capitol and the Governor's State of the State message. I'm John Powell, returning you now to our studios.